I think you just do need to show up sometimes. And that can be true in a lot of different ways. Making those cold calls, you know, just having basically that fearlessness around rejection, which will happen many times as you're growing something. And failures will happen many times. And the failures are really more character tests and tests of the business and ability to sort of regroup and do something better than they are really about the failures, I think, in the first place. I think that's really important. And I think connecting with other business leaders whenever you can. And sometimes it's about just fellow startup entrepreneurs and could even just be about commiserating.
It's no secret that the coronavirus is affecting all of us as individuals. But the effect it's having on business, especially small business, is unprecedented. If we're going to survive this, we need resources and we need each other. We can't do it alone. I'm Jesse Torres, and this is Hack My Business. With my background in economic and workforce development, disaster preparedness, and general business strategy, I know I can help you navigate this scary time in your business and beyond. It's all about resiliency. We'll have invited experts to help us navigate through the current noisy landscape of resources and programs that are being made available today and who will be able to prepare us for tomorrow. Let's do this together. I'm Jesse Torres, and this is Hack My Business.
Welcome back to Hack My Business. This is Jesse Torres, creator and Hack My Business. It's great to be back with all of you listeners out there. I hope you're having a wonderful summer. I'm really excited to be joined today by a fellow Bruin and an amazing entrepreneur, Natasha Case, a chief brand officer at The Urchin Company and co-founder of the famed and amazing ice cream company Cool House, which she started with her equally amazing spouse, Freya Estrella. We're going to be talking today about her companies. I want to talk to her about her journey through entrepreneurship and also pick her brain a bit about business strategy, and definitely want to talk about all the amazing desserts at Cool House. But Natasha, so glad to have you on Hack My Business.
I'm so excited to be here. Great to reconnect with you.
Absolutely. I know there's quite a bit to your journey story. You know, I had to tell you, I did do a deep dive of like all your YouTube videos just to learn more about the company and your guys' origin story. I know that there's quite a bit to it, but I think we would be definitely putting our audience at a disadvantage if we didn't allow you to talk about your origin story and definitely about Farcitecture and the Coachella truck experience, because I think that is such a powerful story about humble beginnings and how you guys did it. So I'd love to just have you share what it was like starting up Cool House.
It was a bit of time ago. It was about 13 years ago. In a way, there are some parallels, I think, with the environment we're in now. You know, it was a business founded in the Great Recession, really kind of rising from the dust around, I think, what was a just major kind of, you know, economic and global event. And I have a kind of unique background coming to it. My background's architecture and design, and Freya's kind of had a bit more of a business background. But I think for me, I just had this interest in bringing food into architecture, two of my passions, and really marrying them and finding all these great ways for them to intersect. And I had just fallen in love with this idea at Berkeley and then at UCLA for grad school. And around the time of the 2008 Great Recession, I was doing yet another project combining food and architecture, which I was by then calling Farcitecture, and making ice cream sandwiches from scratch and unique flavors, but also just made really well and made in a way that I think at the time was a pretty big deal. I think it was kind of a low point for a lot of CPG food and beverage brands. And then I was, you know, naming the combinations after architects, punnily. We had like the Frank Berry, we had the Richard Meyer Lemon, the Caramia Lair after our own LA amazing landscape architect, Mintimalism. So we had all these kind of fun creations, and it was really meant to kind of lighten the mood and give out to friends at work. I was at the time working at Disney Imagineering, who were, you know, getting tough news, and there were a lot of layoffs. And it was really more of a passionate hobby. And I met Freya, and she really, I think, saw the business potential in the idea and started vetting me on the business. And I realized I hadn't really brought it to that forum yet. We just started to investigate the ice cream space more. We saw that there was this huge opportunity in terms of not only the quality, like I had mentioned, and the unique flavors, but also the format. Like everything out there was really pints and, you know, quarts and half gallons. And this was all about, you know, reinventing the ice cream sandwich, which is a totally different experience. But I think what was more meaningful to us is that we didn't really connect with the other ice cream brands that we saw in grocery stores in terms of their story and in terms of what they represented to us. We didn't feel represented as millennials, as women, as queer women, because Freya and I had started dating. Freya as a woman of color, we thought, let's make the brand that we want to buy. Why not us? You know, we're 25. We've got literally nothing to lose. So we're like, how are we going to do this? How are we going to, you know, be the ice cream brand of our generation and be revolutionaries? And we didn't really understand the grocery store given the timing, getting like a small business loan or raising money to do an ice cream shop seemed out of reach. So like, let's reinvent the ice cream truck for our generation. We found a beat up postal van on Craigslist for $2,700. And it had no engine. We actually towed it to Freya's mom's house where we tried to figure out, what are we going to do with this? Meanwhile, we thought, let's go big or go home with this crazy ice cream sandwich idea. What's the biggest event we could possibly think of? Coachella Music Festival. We just basically relentlessly asked them to let us sell there. They eventually caved and they said, you can be the first, you know, food truck to come to Coachella. Like, great. We're going to set up the company. We're going to, you know, social media to tell people where we are. Basic foundation. So Coachella comes. How are we going to get an ice cream truck with no engine to the desert? We figured out that if we joined AAA Platinum, we got one free 200-mile tow. So the morning of Coachella, we pretended the truck broke down, even though it never drove, and they towed us to the desert. And that is how the legend was born.
That is amazing. That is a legendary story, and I love hearing it. I love having you share it. It's so inspiring. Our show really, you know, focuses on very early stage entrepreneurs, you know, people with definitely less than 5 employees, I would say, on the average, people who are just starting out. And to hear that bootstrapping, what does bootstrapping really mean? And for you to share, we took advantage of the car service opportunity made available to AAA. You had a car that wasn't really kind of working, but still made it work. It's amazing. And also just that you, from what I've seen and as a fan of your product line, seeing that you really have been able to tap into, I think, our generation for sure. I'm Gen X. It really feels like you've really been able to kind of hit it, even like the events like Coachella, knowing that Coachella would be the right place to go. Starting off with the focus around architecture, which is so unique. I do have a question. Do any of those architects know? Are they familiar with your product line? Because I would think for this point, you're really well established. But have you ever been reached out to by any of those architects about their flavors?
Yeah, Frank Gehry, a number of times. He catered his birthday parties. Mia is a good friend. So we kind of like really made that for her and used it at events that were meaningful to her, like along the LA River and for her office. Rem Koolhaas, who the company is named after, we finally got to kind of bring the truck to one of his spaces. He doesn't have that many in the US or LA. So there's a temple on Wilshire, actually not far from my house, where we had the truck at the groundbreaking and he came to the truck. So that was super, super cool. Richard Meier's daughter has come to the truck. So that was cool. Cool to meet her. But yeah, we've had a lot of interactions with the architects. And I think that's part of it. It's like almost this friendship, this connection, this storytelling with them, and to really, I think, promote them and tell their story. So it kind of has this personal element. And I think that's been a meaningful part of building the company.
Absolutely. I remember when I started my own consulting firm, this is back in 2019, I had worked in government for many years. And really stressing about my first purchase, which for me was a laptop, and really stressing about that, right? I didn't have any income coming in. I can only imagine starting a food business, right? And I was just wondering if you could talk about that. Like, how scary were those first early bootstrapping days? I mean, were you confident that you're going to succeed, or was it a challenge? I would love to just hear your thoughts around that.
I think there was some almost like delusional confidence that you kind of need to have. You know, you need to be a little bit crazy to think that you can take something from nothing and build a whole world around it and make people obsessed. And businesses are these fictions, you know, and these stories, but something that's special enough and meaningful enough will create that connection and people will buy into it. But really, at the end of the day, you know, that's what's there. So I think it does take a certain, like, really strong vision and willingness to hear from many that what you're doing doesn't make sense. Now, there's the other side of that, which is, I think, also, like, having good instincts and really listening. Because in the early days when we were building the company and we would kind of tell people what we were doing and what Koolhaas was about, I mean, the way people would light up and the joy it would bring them and then the experience of eating it, like, you have to really look for those cues and know to stay on the right track. Like, there are obviously scenarios where you might say, you know what, I had this dream, but it's not always going to become a successful business. But I think, too, like, we started it so humbly. We had no real investment or investors. We still were working on our other jobs. We were young. I think there's something special about starting your business in your 20s, because to me, your 20s is like, you kind of don't think that many steps ahead. And maybe that's a good thing, because there's a lot you could talk yourself out of. You know, now I'm 38, got the mortgages, you got the kids, like, it's harder to take that risk then. But I think because we started with such a minimum viable product, at the end of the day was like, look, if this doesn't work out, it'll be unfortunate. We knew it was an exciting idea. We worked really hard, but it wasn't like going to ruin our lives.
And I definitely want to unpack the idea around the risk taking, because during the pandemic, there's been this incredible rise in entrepreneurship. Many people who are either stepping away from their job that they had for a long time, or they might be newly retired and doing it for the first time. And so really understanding, like, how do you accept certain type of risk? And I wondered if you could advise someone who maybe is not 20 years old, right? Maybe they're jumping into the fray of entrepreneurship for the first time, but how would you advise them? You know, how could they think about risk in a way that makes sense to them?
You know, don't put all your eggs in one basket is one thing. And especially today with e-com, with the ability to even just have a website to sort of get a feel for what you're building versus having to go through a whole brick and mortar experience. And with all the different platforms with which to do that, that are really kind of turnkey, like a Shopify, let's say, kind of starting something on the side and letting it build and letting it get exciting, and then deciding to take another level of risk. You know, I think you can kind of hedge your bets as you go along. Just being really well-informed about the space you're getting into, really doing your research to the best of your ability, seeing the competition and understanding what's kind of the value proposition of their product and what's different about yours. Those are all things that you can do. There's still going to be a huge amount of risk, but you're limiting a little bit of the exposure from just going in totally blind. But I'm definitely a believer in like that sort of side hustle, to use kind of a almost pre-pandemic term. But it is true, because I think it allows the idea to grow and the business to grow without the immense pressure of like fully supporting yourself and your family, which could ultimately have almost too much influence on the decisions you're making and not allow the business to be maybe as pure as it needs to be when you're first starting out.
Love that idea of incremental risk. If you're thinking about it, but you're a little bit maybe hesitant, the idea of like, we'll slowly move into that space. And as you get more and more accustomed to it, maybe going a little bit further and build on it, you know, a little bit more slowly. I really like that idea, especially for those who are, like I said, have their world has been a steady job for a long time, right? And they're a little bit nervous about using their life savings, or maybe just unfamiliar with the particular industry that they want to go into. Well, maybe that might make a whole lot of sense. One thing that really has struck me about Cool House and your work, you've been really kind of such a hard thing for many people to do really well, is you've been really authentic in your approach. And really, like I said, you really found this way to kind of leverage like the right events, the right media. I mean, I remember back in the early 2000s, social media was just kind of starting. It wasn't as, I guess, strategic in the way it is now. Things have kind of accelerated quite a bit. But even your sense of the right events to be at, to use a mobile truck for your product line when that was becoming a thing back in LA and New York and Austin, and even using Twitter to engage with people who were really fascinated with your product line and to make sure that they were in step with what you were trying to do. How do you do that so effectively? Is it just because you're a cool person and you're surrounded by cool people, or do you do research? How do you stay on top of what is cool at the time?
I think part of it is Cool House is one of those things where we were very much like embody the target consumer. And there's a very authentic connection with who we're talking to and marketing to and making products for and what we want, what I would expect and want and hope to see from a brand. So there was that element of just, I think, fluidity with that. A friend shared with me, she started her career selling ads with, I think, CNN. And the amount of money that was spent to understand the target that they wanted to go after and why. And then she moved over to Adult Swim. And she was like, okay, where's our plan to spend money to figure out who we're talking to? And they're like, oh, we don't spend any money on that ever. And that's because kind of everyone at the company, I don't know, we just know. Because the people who are here are the people who watch it. And so we know who we're talking to and why. So I do think there was a piece, because now as we've built the company and we've actually sold it to Perfect Day in the Urchin Company, which I can share more about, since December of last year, there is a huge amount of investment on data and it's extremely valuable. But it would be, you know, dishonest to say that that would have necessarily mattered when we were first starting Cool House, because it was just that kind of authenticity. And I think, too, you have to know what you don't know. The last few years of Cool House, you know, we would get like an inquiry from a celebrity or, you know, an influencer or creator. And everyone at the office would be really excited about, oh, this person wants the truck, you know, for their wedding. And I'd be like, oh, who is it? And they'd say the name and be like, I have no idea who that is. And be like, that's a good thing. If I didn't know, I was like, then we're definitely saying yes to that. Because it was starting to become like the people I was excited about are probably don't really necessarily know how to leverage posting about Cool House at an event, whatever. It's a different universe. I'm excited about them because they're my generation or whatever. So I think it's also the kind of having the humility to just know that you need the right folks on your team who can be dialed in, and just making sure that they have a really strong thesis and they have access to the tools they need. For example, if they do need to buy consumer data or do tests and research, that, you know, you're willing to give them the space and the trust to help you execute in a way that, yeah, at a certain point may even be out of your own realm.
I really appreciate that. I have a very small consulting firm and I have one associate who's 22. And she definitely reminds me quite a bit that I'm no longer as cool as I thought I was. Although I think I was pretty cool back in the day. I was a music editor for America Online. You know, not many people remember that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, right? See, still some relevance. Yeah. But it is helpful to have a younger staffer who really is aware of the different tools and how to use them and the right audiences to be it to, you know, promote certain things. So there's strength in having a team that is, I guess, kind of diverse in ability in that way, I would say.
100%.
Speaking about the evolution of Cool House, can you talk about how the company has transformed? I would also say that you guys have really seemed to have made just like all the right moves, moving into distribution channels, the sale of the company. How did you know how to do that type of strategy? Was that something that you learned from others, something that you just developed on your own, just through kind of trial and error? How did you develop those kind of go-to tactics and strategy when it came to managing the business?
The origins of distribution did come from us. We started with the trucks. They made a lot of sense to kind of get out there quickly. There was a low investment. There was a great platform, kind of grassroots platform for reaching people and being part of experiences and events and making that connection. And then the shop was like a way to really build community and really test that channel out. And then, you know, it was like, well, we might as well test a Whole Foods, local Whole Foods. And I just kind of honestly wandered into one and found the right person to talk to, which was a different world of Whole Foods back then, certainly. But there are stores like that still today, of course. And we had the basics in Whole Foods, the true, again, big minimum viable product fans over here. But we were very lucky to partner with an angel investor pretty early on in 2011. We started the business in 2009, named Bobby Margolis. And he was really like a fashion titan who had been through it all, who was like, he was kind of like a Woodstock era entrepreneur. And I think he saw us, the Coachella era entrepreneurs, like kind of seeing himself in us in terms of the next generation, you know, business revolutionaries, like he considered himself. And he really, I think, encouraged us to build the business in a way that was scalable and that could live on and have a legacy. And that grocery was the kind of best place to do that and where you could really have a potentially prominent exit, because that's really, of course, what's in it for investors. So he put in money and really just became a mentor. And we started to really grow the distribution and focus on that. And that has become, you know, 95% of the business. And ultimately, without that, there would have been no exit at the end of last year. So I think just we always kind of knew starting the business that we wanted to have some kind of exit strategy because we were thinking really, really big. But I think a little bit of kind of understanding the market, being willing to trial and sometimes error and learn and grow with all the different channels, because you don't know until you at least explore something, so that we could have something in place that could attract the bigger dollars down the road. And eventually the buyout was definitely the way we went about it.
I think for some of our listeners, even the idea of being able to form those types of relationships with, say, like a venture capitalist, or even your confidence in just kind of walking into a Whole Foods and forming the relationship, what do you think is the secret to that? For those folks who might be jumping into a small business world for the first time where that isn't familiar to them, you know, they might not know the best way to do that. But what would you recommend to them, like as far as forming that kind of network or establishing those contacts?
I mean, I do think you have to be willing to knock on some doors. Like I said, just and how you're pointing out, just showing up in the store and asking for the right person and asking them how it works and what they think you should do. Like, well, a lot of people in the grocery world are not going to be responding to emails, particularly cold emails. I think you just do need to show up sometimes, and that can be true in a lot of different ways. Making those cold calls, you know, just having basically that fearlessness around rejection, which will happen many times as you're growing something. And failures will happen many times. And the failures are really more character tests and tests of the business and ability to sort of regroup and do something better than they are really about the failures, I think, in the first place. I think that's really important. And I think connecting with other business leaders whenever you can, and that doesn't have to be like this whole like mentor world where they've all been titans like Bobby was. I mean, that kind of one-on-one relationship was great. And he definitely was a coach and was a mentor. But sometimes it's about just fellow, you know, startup entrepreneurs. And It could even just be about commiserating. Advice is tough because I feel like, first of all, it's very rare that you have enough context of a situation to give someone advice. I feel like it's better to share stories. But also, I think sometimes you talk to people of another generation of growing their brand, and they may have many valuable things to say, but the world has moved on in such a dramatic way over each generation that it's not like if they did what they did in, you know, 1980, in 2022, it could be nothing. I wouldn't tell someone to go send a truck to Coachella, you know, this year, whatever. But I do think like a network, people that you can relate to and people that can understand and share resources and just support each other is really important because it can be very, very alienating to start and grow a business.
Couldn't agree with you more. I mean, Hack My Business, and before I started my consulting firm, I was running a federal program for small businesses called the SBDC. And that was always my biggest advice, you know, was to connect with other entrepreneurs because nobody's really going to understand what you're going through other than people who've been there, done that, or going through it at the same time. And I got to tell you, I have friends on speed dial, you know, or text where just during the day I'm asking them, what do you think about this? You know, is this the same way you would approach it? Is there something else that you would have tried? And that has been invaluable in the understanding of how to run my own business. So I couldn't agree with you more. I did want to ask, I also have a spouse who is an entrepreneur. She runs an event production company. We have two young kids. One's going to be turning 13. The other just turned 11. I guess not so young anymore. How do you and Freya do it? Because I know you guys are both entrepreneurs. How have you found the ability to just kind of weave together parenting, family, and the entrepreneurship life?
Well, first of all, Freya's not day-to-day at Cool House anymore and hadn't really been involved, you know, in the 9 years leading up to the acquisition. I mean, the first four, we really built the business together. And I mean, I think we got lucky in a lot of ways, actually, because what I would recommend to people, I guess I'm going back on my advice giving, but I think this is a pretty across the board, doesn't have to be particular to a situation, is especially if you're working with any kind of loved one, that could be your significant other, that could be a family member, that can be a friend, but you kind of want to create agreements around worst case scenario when you're not in the worst case scenario. For example, what happens if someone wants to leave or the business falls apart or whatever? We didn't really do that until like 2 years in. But I think we did have that, you know, in place early enough. And I think learning from the early days, like trying to have boundaries around when we talk about work and when we don't. And I think being there for each other as far as business owners and leaders and sharing feedback and insight when someone asks, but not being in the business together, I would say, was a good thing, especially at the time. But I think Freya is my toughest critic and my biggest supporter. And for me, I kind of like that and I need that. You know, sometimes she'll call something out and at first I'm in denial, but then I realize, you know, she's right and I should listen to that. I should try that. So I think you have to know what works for you with your significant other. And I will say so many people that I meet who really just kind of are riding high in their career. There's someone, doesn't even have to be the significant other, like someone in their house that really kind of like understands and has their back and just like is that person outside of the business that you can talk to, reflect with. And that's something I think that's really powerful.
Thank you for sharing that. I feel the same way with my own spouse, you know, although definitely I need to become better at boundaries because we can talk about work a little bit too much in that we have different businesses. But yeah, but the same thing, like we share our business challenges with each other and we give each other tough love about how we could have managed something. And sometimes we'll be in the same room. So we very easily can hear each other's kind of woes at the same time. And it's always very tempting to kind of turn the chair and say like, well, have you thought about this approach? So I definitely can appreciate that. Your work has always had a focus, I would say, on inclusivity and diversity. I mean, I fell in love with Cool House because you guys were carrying Latino flavors. To see an ice cream that had churro in it, for me, was a big deal because you didn't see a whole lot of that in the early 2000s around that kind of incorporation. I wonder how would you advise entrepreneurs who want to do a business that is thoughtful about that, that's relevant to social issues they care about, but want to do it with authenticity? What would you recommend to them? Because I think, especially now, where there's just so much kind of going on in the world right now, you know, that can cause a lot of stress, and people want to make a difference, you know, with the dollar, with their business. How would you recommend they think about it before they launch their new business?
I think doing something that's really authentic and meaningful that connects with your own story, because there's a lot of different opinions on this. Like people ask me a lot, like around pride, like, what do you think about all just the big companies that, you know, put a rainbow, I don't know if it's been called like rainbow washing or gay washing or whatever at this point, but does that bother you because they're just being opportunistic? And I definitely understand that argument, but I think at the end of the day, it's still better than having no, you know, like if it can do anything to move the dial forward for, you know, raising money for a gay rights organization or whatever. But that being said, I think the best case scenario is when it's authentic. And, you know, for Kulas, for example, like we can really own the story around what it means to be an LGBTQ founded, grown, led business. And that's a platform and that's a way for other people to be seen. That's a way to connect with the community. That's a way to kind of guide public speaking, to guide, this is one of my favorite ways to really kind of support a mission is like with products, like creating flavors that are delicious that people can enjoy. And they can be joyful moments, but there can be some sort of fundraise connected to it where we can actually give back. And those are always, I think, going to be just the most successful. Is there something real there? And it really, really resonates. We did a ton of work with Kool House around entrepreneurs of diverse backgrounds and giving back. And we made this flavor for Black Girl Ventures called Currency Cake and raises money for one of their marketing grants for one of their folks going through their entrepreneurship program. What that could have meant to like Freya, if a brand was doing that for her when she was starting out. I think it's so powerful. Like, and then you think of it as like, oh, we have this platform. We can do this. We can do something that means something, I think is the way to think about it. So something that feels real, something that's, there's a story there. It's a part of your life that you could see being that person and how that can make a difference. That would be my North Star for building in a social mission.
Amazing. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. What comes next for you and your journey?
So we have sold Kool House to Perfect Day. It's amazing cow-free dairy that we're trying to grow Kool House to eventually not have dairy from cows and use this technology to give people the same amazing dairy that we love, but with a hugely different approach to sustainability because the impact that can make in the positive direction would be incredible for us and for other brands who want to do the same. I'm actually going to be soon leading a new company called Lunch Bunch, which is a kids' lunch delivery program. It's amazing. The food, the characters, and kids are way more likely to eat nutritious food. So I'm looking forward to starting that in August and, you know, building it all over again.
That is amazing. As a parent, I think that is sorely needed and so exciting to hear that is your new venture. We're out of time. I just want to say that you are a big inspiration. You and Freya are a big inspiration and your work really matters, especially for those of us who are entrepreneurs and, you know, thinking about how we do our work and the meaning it has on a larger scale. So I just want to give you big thanks for coming on Hack My Business and sharing your story. Looking forward to seeing the next big thing to come from you and from Freya. But thank you so much for your time. Thank you for being on Hack My Business.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me on. It was great to talk to you.
If you need help and want to be a part of our community and find resources to grow your business, join us at our website at smallbusinessfront.com. We'd love to see you there. Have a great day, and we'll catch you next time on Hack My Business.